permanecer décadas en Estados Unidos. Recientemente, el Departamento de Seguridad Nacional les dio extensiones automáticas sin que llegue una legalización.
Estas son extensiones automáticas y no nuevas designaciones, que significa que las personas que no han solicitado para este beneficio no pueden solicitar en este momento, ya que son solamente extensiones. Es muy importante que estas personas que tienen el TPS y no tienen su permiso de trabajo, que soliciten para su permiso de trabajo, ya que no le darán automáticamente estas tarjetas para demostrar que se ha extendido automáticamente.
Los tepecianos de países como El Salvador, Haití, Honduras, Nepal, Nicaragua y Sudán no tienen que pagar una tarifa ni presentar una solicitud para mantener su TPS y se les extenderá su documentación hasta el 31 de diciembre del 2022. Políticos demócratas están conscientes que no todo se ha cumplido en este gobierno y California tambalea en elecciones de destitución de Gavin Newsom.
Tenemos que hacer todo lo posible para defender el futuro de nuestra gente trabajadora aquí en la quinta potencia mundial, el estado de California. Si no, los republicanos, que quedó muy claro, buscarán revocar todas nuestras políticas públicas que favorecen la condición humana de nuestra gente trabajadora.
La Alianza Nacional de TPS, una organización con 60 comités en todo Estados Unidos, asegura que seguirá luchando por los derechos de los beneficiarios de este programa.
En este estado tenemos mucha influencia, no solo dentro del estado, sino nacionalmente. Imagínense que ahora, con el presidente Biden, el demócrata de presidente, y que tenemos los votos en el Senado, será los cambios que podemos hacer, la extensión del TPS para nuestros hermanos centroamericanos, salvadoreños, ¿verdad? Eso es algo de vida y muerte. Porque si uno es deportado, imagínese sin las protecciones. So necesitamos leyes de inmigración.
Las organizaciones de tepecianos aseguran que seguirán tocando la puerta a los políticos para que llegue una legalización.
El gobierno no ha cumplido dando una residencia permanente a los ciudadanos salvadoreños, sino que con el TPS lo están prorrogando y en determinado momento eso se va a acabar. Y toda nuestra gente de regreso.
Desde Los Ángeles, California, soy Rosy Orbach, Hispan TV.
En otras noticias, las y los obreros uruguayos convocaron a un paro general para rechazar las políticas económicas del gobierno. Mateo Grille viene con los detalles.
Bajo la consigna artiguista de que los más infelices sean los más privilegiados, hoy la Central Única de Trabajadores del Uruguay, el PITCC, convocó a un paro general que será parcial para algunos trabajadores y total, las 24 horas del día, para algunos sindicatos. Se espera desde la Central de Trabajadores que sea una de las movilizaciones más importantes de los últimos 10 años. Así fue señalado en la conferencia de prensa convocando a este paro que fue desarrollada en la jornada de ayer en la sede de la Central, porque este paro reúne varias particularidades, una de las cuales, quizás la más saliente, es que se han sumado varios sectores del campo, del trabajo rural, a la movilización central que los trabajadores desarrollarán en la jornada de hoy en la capital, en Montevideo, pero también en los distintos departamentos del país. Muchos trabajadores rurales y también productores rurales que están viendo afectada su economía y sus condiciones de vida por la política económica del gobierno se han sumado al paro general de esta jornada y también en defensa del Instituto Nacional de Colonización, que es un organismo histórico en el Uruguay que compra y reparte tierras.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide de tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundación Xiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President Daniel Ortega's Sandinista National Liberation Front is the controlling party in the assembly.
Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city.
And coming up next on the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org, it's the 16th of September 2021 Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show. This is a flashback show for a number of reasons, both my own over-cramped schedule as well as sort of family emergencies among my technical crew, and so we're going to kind of have to rely on your indulgence and hope you can enjoy this show from a past era. Specifically, this is the August 7th, 2014 show, so it's only 7 years old, not 17, 27, or 37, as some of our shows have been. What we will be listening to will be interviews with Pick Your Punches' Pat Colby, who updates her struggle with City Attorney John Barisoni, or at least he was City Attorney then. It's now Anthony Condotti, but Condotti comes out of Barisoni's legal offices, for a disability accommodation to the Move Along Every Hour law downtown. That's a law that has been on the books for 20 years, but after a state legislative change in the law regarding vendors, which essentially sort of overruled the city's very restrictive laws on what you could and couldn't vend, really ridiculously so, but done so under a sort of a, well, another reactionary regime headed by, I don't know, was it Lynn Robinson or David Terrazas. It's been a pretty wretched council for the last decade, I got to say. The Move Along Every Hour law is now sort of a Move Along Every 4 Hours law, but it still involves massive penalties if the police choose to try to impose them. I have not heard of this law being used recently, but then you don't see too many people on Pacific Avenue vending their wares or setting up a political table. Occasionally you do, but times have become very constrained. What with COVID and the reoccurrence of COVID with the Delta variant and so forth. So anyway, Pick Your Punches' Pat Colby is going to update her struggle with the city attorney trying to get a disability accommodation, meaning she wants to say, look, I'm disabled, therefore I have the right to do some vending where it doesn't interfere with other people in ways that you cannot interfere with me. And she talks about that. However, apparently he agreed, the city attorney did, but then refused to put it on paper, according to her account. Then we have a flashback to, is it Sergeant or Officer Azua? I think at one time it was Officer, and then he became a Sergeant. His reported brutalization of Cynthia Kennedy no relation to Scott Kennedy or John F. Kennedy, on Saturday, April 10th, 2010, where Kennedy had her hair pulled out, was smashed against his squad car. As far as I know, Azua never received any kind of discipline, criticism, or correction, nor had police, has police policies changed. Jetpen John Colby, that's Pat Colby's brother, called in to report his contact, his phone contact with Berasoni. We have street interviews from Beggarbacker Becky Johnson, Rap Smith John Ireton reporting a braceless ticket on the boardwalk, reports from Strummer, and then there's typewriter man Kevin Devane, and interviews with, there's a lot of interviews with Donnie and Sherry. A lot of these folks you probably don't know, though it's not so long ago that you, some of you, might remember them. I'm hoping that the Sunday show, which is usually longer and also tends to include a flashback, but often a much more contemporary section of the show, will be doing just that. But we'll see. In the meantime, enjoy this if you can. And if you're interested in this particular period, you can go back to the Huff archives. You can actually hear shows that happened before and after and that sometimes follow up these incidents. And you can find them described on the Huff website. If you have any questions, give me a call at 831-423-4833, or 423-HUFF. And I guess I'll leave it at that. Yeah, if you have any questions, comments, and also I urge you to get in touch if you have any incidents that have been happening. We're particularly concerned about increasing intensification of harassment in the benchlands. At the Huff meeting today, on the 16th of September, 2021, we were getting reports that Andy Mills himself has returned in person to harass people in the benchlands, or was at certain points during the last week, and various notices to vacate for at least a few individuals have happened already. So be alert, be aware, and remember, it can and did and has happened here.
The hallway, a problem for only one reason that present raises the question, who wants a plan? The homeless, our problem for only one reason, our president raises a question, who owns a land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection?
that's most of Land by Five. And since many of you regular listeners to the show have heard this many times, let's just skip the rest of it, shall we? And let's get into the show. First of all, I want to welcome Pat Colby. Pick 'em off, Pat, is what you prefer?
Yeah, pick 'em off. Pick 'em off for fraud.
Now, why do you say that you want to... Who do you want to pick off, Pat? And you're just picking at people. What's going on?
Well, there's a lot of fraud and corruption and dirty dealing in the city, and I want to pick off all those people that are siphoning off our hard-earned tax dollars.
That sounds
clean.
Like a bunch of cliches, if I ever heard any, to pick them off, Pat. But you have been doing stuff that is hardly cliche. You've actually been going to the dreaded bowels of Barisoni's office. That's John Barisoni, our city attorney. You want to describe why you went there recently, let's say, I guess a month or two ago. You put in a request. And
well, it was
talk
April 30th. I put in a reasonable accommodation request because that move-along law for people that are tabling on Pacific... Because
tell us about that law.
Yeah, it requires that performers and vendors, anyone tabling with a display, must move along every hour.
Explain what a display is, because most people think it's a sign or something.
A display is a device that's separate from yourself. You'll correct me if I get this wrong. Usually like a table. And...
That's right. It's defined, actually, as anything capable of holding tangible things, which I suppose could be you, too. But it's not, I don't think it's ever been applied to the person as such. It means it was actually designed to discriminate against people who are spare changing, using their First Amendment rights, but annoying the merchants and, you know, those who feel that such begging should not be a visible part of the downtown scene. So it could be a cup. It could be a... an open guitar case, it could be a political table, because all these
are...
A cap. Anything capable of holding political, or not political, anything that is tangible. There's also a vendor who has her jewelry. She's a jeweler. She's trying to display it, or an artist.
Trying to make a living.
Those are all display devices. And hence the move-along law. First of all, of course, the display device law talks about how limited amount of area you can use, which is 12 square feet. Nobody does this on Pacific Avenue, and I'm not aware the police are really enforcing this particularly, but it is, in fact, the law. You're only allowed to have three of those small squares that are 2 by 2, which is 12 square feet.
Which doesn't fit because card tables are 4 by 4.
So, right, 16 square feet. For
so it
table.
Doesn't apply, I mean... The smallest table you usually get is a card table.
Well, get yourself a smaller table. Come
but
on.
But they don't sell them.
Well, make one up. Be inventive. You know, this is so...
No, we're not allowed to use blankets.
No, you're not allowed to put a blanket on the
or
ground.
Or a tarp.
That's a new law new last year, that barred freestanding or required freestanding devices. Also, every particular, quote, display device must be 12 feet away from any other display device. So, for example, if you have a table or there's a guy with a guitar, he has to be at least 6 of those squares away from you. And, of course, you also both have to be 7 squares or 14 feet away from a building, a kiosk, a phone booth, an intersection.
A trash can.
A trash can. A
accidentally
trash
put in there.
Compactor. But still
wrongly
retained.
Put in there.
It was still retained, even though it was, I think even Scott Collins admitted that was not what he intended.
And you'll get cited for it.
So you get very, very, very small portion of the sidewalk, as I've said many a time, is available. But you apparently just aren't satisfied with our city's attempt to remove the human clutter downtown.
Sidewalk clutter,
that's
according
correct.
To Pamela Comstock.
That's one of our councilmen.
I believe it was May 16th city council meeting.
And you, in fact, gave a display, it wasn't a display device.
PowerPoint.
A PowerPoint presentation, made a display, you might say, of your concern about this issue because you were concerned about the clutter that the signs, illegal signs, commercial signs that were put
table
up.
Table and chairs.
On the sidewalk.
Blocking ADA, making, creating
well,
ADA
tables
violations.
And chairs may be they're not violations of city ordinances, but the... And they'd be a violation of ADA.
They are.
But,
we looked it up.
But it is true that the city ordinances are themselves violated by every single sign, freestanding commercial sign you see on the public sidewalk, which is kind of peculiar. I mean, I should think maybe they might have a way of allowing people to lease areas briefly for periods of time to have out those signs, but in fact they don't. I'm not sure what the reason for that is.
Well, what we read with the public records request that we got, that it's illegal for the sidewalk sandwich boards to be there, but the Planning Commission allows them to have special permission to break the law.
I
read that in a public record request.
I read...
The Planning Commission gave them permission, which they don't have the right to.
You'll have to show me that request, because I think I sent you, unless you got a separate request, I made the request.
I think it was something that John got.
Well, interesting. Because my understanding, and I was told by the Planning Commission department, that no, all such signs are illegal. So I don't know where John...
Well, just like we...
Anyway, there's a misunderstanding.
We're getting different public records, even though my brother, John Colby, the public record requester king, has requested the same ordinance that you got, and they wouldn't give them to him.
Well, my understanding is it is illegal to have signs up and down Pacific Avenue, because that's what the department verbally informed me of. And I will take it from them, whatever, you know, other information, until I learn better. We have a caller, though. Let's see who's on the line and what they've got to say. Hello there, caller. You're on Free Radio. Can you hear me?
Hi. It sounds like your stream is going on and off. I hope you're recording this so that you'll have a better recording of it.
I appreciate the call, caller. I'm actually looking for the... there we go.
Yeah, I can hardly hear you on the radio, too. I mean, the phone, too, so if
is
you get
it
alert...
Me?
You know,
I can hear you good, but I can't hear Robert good.
Well, that's strange. All right, I'm going to turn up the...
There we go.
The
now I can hear you, Robert.
Okay, well, thank you. All right, that's good. Yeah. No, the stream is coming out as far as I can see it, but maybe...
It's going on and off and on and off, so you may want to be recording it.
Okay, and indeed, thank you, caller.
Thanks for the heads up.
And, yeah, if you do want to catch this show because, or maybe you're having a hard time hearing it now, it is distantly recorded, although the distant recording may reflect problems in transmission, too. But you can do, you can find out for yourself by going to the Huff website. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and then it is at huffsantacruz.org. So check that out, and then check out, go to the name of the show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And you can look for the show, and it should be available shortly after it's transmitted, like around 8:30 or 9 o'clock tonight, hopefully. I actually don't know how soon it shows up, but it does show up. So in any case, we had that lengthy, somewhat tumultuous introduction to the move-along law, which we didn't really get to. The display device ordinance created initially, part of it was created in 1994, but the move-along portion of it was an unfortunate creation of a... anal professor named Ed Porter, who got on the city council twice, actually. And he apparently saw something in Santa Monica he liked and misinterpreted it, according to observer Tom Noddy, who's been kind of watching this stuff. He's a street performer activist, as well as an internationally known bubble performer. Anyway, the move-along law specifically requires you to move every...
Physically.
It requires you, if you are advised by someone that you have been playing there or sitting in the same space, or if you have a display device, actually, you can play your instrument all day long in the same space if you don't have a display device sitting on the public property, which, of course, can be anything that's sitting there. So most people do, because that's usually required for many activities. You have to, if they tell you that you've been there for an hour and request you move and you don't, you're subject to a heavy fine. You also have to move 100 feet, can't come back for 24 hours, and say yes, sir, and tip your hat. Actually, that's probably not required, but you do have to surrender your right to use the first sidewalk according to what I consider to be your First Amendment right, because what happens with all these very limited spaces that are actually available, as well as the requirement you move along every hour, if a police officer so advises you, and they do so almost whimsically or selectively, that's what I've seen.
Yeah, and sometimes you have timed yourself and not been there an hour, and if they tell you it's been an hour, everything goes according to what they say.
So because of the fact that it is so selective, it is obviously...
discriminatory?
It is a situation that apparently, provoked your concern, Pat, and you also have a disability, which you felt...
Physical disability.
So tell us about that, and tell us what happened and what you did.
Well, I have physical disabilities in my arms and my legs, so that move along law would discriminate against me. I haven't been able to go out there, and what I plan on doing is demoing, making cranes and giving out cranes and just talking to the public, and if they want...
You mean little paper cranes, right?
Yeah, little origami paper cranes, and if they want to donate, since Medi-Cal no longer covers glasses and I'm almost can't read because I need new glasses and I require a very expensive $100 lens, and also dental isn't covered and I'd like to keep all my teeth healthy and in my mouth, I'm forced to go to the streets looking for donations. But the Move Along Law actually violates the American with Disabilities Law, because when you're disabled and you can't do the same thing that other people can do, they're supposed to reasonable accommodation. And so we have asked the city attorney, John Barasoni, to give me a reasonable accommodation. It's pretty much what is called a vanilla request. It won't cost the city any money. They don't have to make any ramps. They don't have to do anything except, you know, have the officers not cite me and allow me to not move along, which is outrageous for vendors. And I've talked with a lot of people, and there's quite a number of people lined up for me to set this precedent. So we did ask him for one. I left a letter, official letter at his office, and he never responded and never responded. We tried calling. I told the different deputy city attorneys at the city council meeting that I was still waiting for a response. Everyone kept sending me back to Barasoni, and he wouldn't respond because there's deadlines on how fast they have to respond. So my brother finally called. And finally, he also sent an email. And finally, after some other things that we caught the city doing illegally, Barasoni conceded in a voice message to my brother's phone that he would accommodate me. But for the accommodation to be official so that I have something proof to show the officers to comply with the American with Disabilities Act, the ADA, I need written proof, written permission that the one-hour law doesn't apply. Because if it's violating federal law, which the ADA is, then federal law always trumps local, state, city laws. And so we had a conversation with him today. My brother spoke with him, John Colby, because he advocates for me, and Barasoni flat out refused to give us written letters. He said the voicemail is all he's going to do, that we're taking up too much time of the city's time, even though this is legally his job. This is what he gets paid to do. It's not abnormal that you go to the city attorney. He said he did send it on to the police department, but I found that when you tell one officer about something, it doesn't go through the whole department. And so at this point, maybe we'll be able to catch John, who was the person speaking to him. Barasoni was very defensive and a bit argumentative, and he just flat out refused to do his job.
You know, I have two suggestions. First, you send John a sympathetic email that says, you know, I understand you're a busy man, many fish to fry, and that sort of thing. So perhaps you can just send me a copy of the letter you sent to the police department. I mean, that could be relatively simple. That's number one. Number two, you could simply say, well, here's the letter that would, in fact, authorize me to comply with both the city law and the Americans with Disabilities Act. And just have him send the whole letter in and say, all you have to do is sign the bottom. If you want to make a change or two, that's fine. We understand you have a lot of problems, and you're a busy man. You have to take, you're the city attorney for two cities, for both the Capitola and Santa Cruz. So you share that burden with your wife. So it's a sort of a family travail. So we're going to be helpful, and we can do that. So that's my suggestion. suggestion what you do with those two possibilities?
Well, he did forward my original letter to the police department, who has said nothing to us. So that's what he sent to them. He just sent a copy of my letter. So if they were supposed to do something like
that,
he didn't
send a letter to the police.
No, he has not.
Well, then you need to help out poor John by writing a letter that he can send both to the police department and to you. I mean, the man is too busy to really help you at this time. So write him a letter that he can sign.
Actually, what we're probably going to end up doing, because we're being forced in this situation, because it isn't just me that has these physical disabilities and reasons for this, that this 1 hour move along is such a problem and stops them from being downtown tabling, is the next step is to go to a disability law firm. And
okay, well, we'll await that and see when
yeah,
that happens.
Unfortunately,
you can discuss that. I'm gonna roll along. Yeah, I know. Well, that's how it goes.
You know, he just wrote a letter.
Right, and we'll talk about that when you do it and if it actually has some consequences. You certainly could do that.
I do have a copy of his voice message here, if you'd like to run it.
Sure, if you want to play it. Why don't you play it into your microphone? I guess we can plug it in directly. This will plug into your machine. Is this going to plug in here? What do you think? Is this plug?
Well, let's try it this way.
Have you got an earphone plug?
Yeah, I do.
Is it going here?
Right.
Try it. See if it goes in.
Robert can't get it into the hole.
There you go.
A little humor there.
Okay. So let's hold it. Wait. No, just a moment. Hold it. Wait. So we're setting it up again. It was a little we're kind of fumbling around primitive equipment here in the studio. If you want to call in with any of these thoughts, perhaps you have some thoughts about our retiring city attorney. He will, I guess, this is his last year, and without any kind of public selection process, Condotti is going to be taking over his job. That again, you know, I have nothing against these folks, you know, just that's neither here nor there. It's, of course, their decisions that bother me. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's give it a try. Go ahead.
Okay, it's ready. Oh, there we go. Okay.
We got some problems. We'll come back to this. And in the meantime, let's take...
I'm ready now.
Are you ready? Okay, let's try it.
Next message from phone number 831-423-8387. Received July 29th at
1:03 p.m. Hi, Mr. Colby. This is John Barasoni, returning your call. I'm assuming that you're referring to the letter that Patricia Colby delivered to my office on April 30th. Unfortunately, it was from her, and she didn't leave a phone number or an email address or a mailing address, so I did not have the ability to respond to her. I also assume that since she was asking the San Antonio Police Department for an accommodation, that she would have delivered a copy of the same letter to them, but evidently she did not. Call me that you're representing her. In any event, we already have a policy in place that we don't discriminate against people on the basis of disability. So if she's down there and she has a spot and she doesn't want to move after an hour, the police department won't make her move unless there are no other spots available. There are people in line waiting for a spot. They have the right to use the sidewalk as well as their locations. Or if there's somebody available to help her move to another spot, they have to do that as well. Okay? Thank you. And I assume you'll pass that information on to Patricia because I don't have any contact information for her. Thank you. Bye.
So this is a when was this phone call?
July 29th.
Okay, and so there.
There's a couple comments to it.
So you haven't, but he doesn't refuse to send a letter out. So
no, he's refusing to give us a written letter.
So,
of
but
this.
But you don't have any record of that, right?
No, we call. No, we don't have a record.
Okay.
We just call.
Okay, I'm
him.
Not saying it isn't true. I imagine it is. Anything else? I'm going to move on now. Unless
I just want to bring up, if he says I don't want to move along, it's not a choice. I have a physical disability. I'm unable to move on. And instead of maybe getting someone to help me, they need to get someone to move me if they're going to require it. And this is for a lot of other disabled people. It would help them, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think to act as though this law has any validity at all.
So they do discriminate.
Is to me ridiculous, and you know the long way around.
It has no validity.
It is the long way around, and therefore you know it's not the approach I take. But I'm glad that someone is taking an approach, and keep us posted as to what you know how that works. We're going to take a musical break, and then you can make a comment. But we're taking a musical break now. Okay. Okay, so we're back, and I'm now going to turn to, what am I going to turn to? Ah, yes. Well, you know, Pat, you and John actually drew my attention to this officer again last week when you phoned in some reports. That's Officer Azua downtown. I've already talked about this incident on the air where Azua tried to interfere with your videotaping an instance of what you seemed to you to be racial discrimination across the street from Taco Bell last week. And what I wanted to do, because for those who want to follow that whole thing, go back to, I think it was the Sunday show, where you can find it again online at huffsantacruz.org. Or you can actually find a whole discussion at Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. I put out a flyer which had a picture of Officer Azua, thanks to an alert Indie Bay photographer and poster, and talked about, well, gave your account, and I guess it was John's account in a letter to Chief Vogel, concerned about the behavior of his officers. And what I wanted to do was go back to some of Azua's history. And that took me back 4 years to a report by a woman named Cynthia Kennedy. And that is what I'm going to play now. This is from April of 2010. And I'm going to let this kind of speak for itself. You can judge of her credibility or not. I haven't seen her around in the last 4 years, so she may have left town, or who knows what's happened to her. But she did give this report about Kennedy, she was Kennedy, about Azua, which was rather shocking. Again, this, we're talking about Bill Azua, who is a Santa Cruz police officer and has been for quite some time. Let's see if we can hear a little of this and maybe can get your reaction too, Pat, if you want to talk about it.
Good luck. Keep us advised.
And phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the line to call in. I actually probably should have mentioned it was open for the last 40 minutes, and people could call in and ask Wes questions, maybe
Who knows? You may still be listening, because you are listening to 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org here, sitting patiently and having said only, what, 43 words here in the studio, is Cynthia Kennedy. Cynthia, you actually gave me a long interview yesterday regarding, you know, your adventures with Officer Azua, I think his name is.
Yes, Officer Azua.
I actually know Officer Azua, but I want to make sure I got the right officer there. And, you know, if you want, you can go through it again, or I'll be playing it down the road. But, you know, why don't you proceed as you wish? What would you like to discuss? What went down? I guess it was.
Sure.
Was it last Saturday night?
It was this past Saturday night, and I was sitting by. Watching drums being played outside of a grocery store, and I was sitting against a building eating a burrito.
This is New Leaf Market area?
Yep. I was sitting outside eating a burrito.
On Pacific Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Which we all know it's illegal to eat a burrito on Pacific.
Well, did you have a permit is the question.
I forgot to get it.
There you go.
I mean, negligence. Okay. And the officer came up, and he went and talked to the people playing the drums, and then he came and talked to my friend and I.
Now, were the drums being played very loudly?
Obscenely loudly.
Really?
I mean, so disturbing that people weren't gathering to watch or anything.
And what time of day was this?
It was about 8:30 or so.
In the evening?
Yep.
And although I love the dry sarcasm, and I use it all the time, let's pretend the people outside are as dumb as, I sometimes feel I am.
There were a bunch of people, and there were only two street kids there.
The people playing the drums were loud, not very loud, very loud.
They weren't very loud. I mean, right. they sounded like drums.
Right.
I mean, they sounded like a normal.
Did they bother you?
No. I sat and watched them. I stopped for the purpose of watching the drums. I thought the music was beautiful.
And was the cop's purpose to drive the drum people away? Or?
I'm not sure exactly what they said to them, but I'm sure it was something along the lines of, we got a call or something, or you need to move along. And the cop told us that we couldn't sit there and that we needed to stand up. And I was like, okay. So I stood up and I put my...
Because you were sitting illegally within 14 feet of a building.
Yes, yes.
So you admit your crime.
Yes.
So perhaps what followed was just punishment. But you did stand up.
Yes.
Okay,
I stood up and I moved away from the building. I took my dog and I walked away from the building.
You had a dog on the avenue.
The dog law has been repealed.
Well, it hasn't been repealed, but it's in the process of being repealed.
From what I heard, it was okay to have dogs on Pacific.
Well, the Downtown Association has said so, and what they say goes. Even though the law is otherwise still at the moment.
Yeah. I moved away, and I continued eating my burrito. They were still playing the drums, and the officer came back up to my friend and I, and... said that we needed to move along, and I asked him why.
Officer Azua.
And at that time, he was the only officer there.
Were there other people there still?
Yep, there were still other people, people in business suits, people that looked like they were having a night out on the town. I mean, just, you know, regular
this
people having a regular night. Yes.
Saturday, April 10th, I guess.
Yep. And the officer came up to us and asked us to move. I asked him what I was doing. I was like, I'm not breaking the law. I can stand here and eat. Like, if I was breaking the law, an officer has every right to tell me to move along or to leave. If I was being a disturbance, I wasn't saying anything. I was merely observing. I wasn't getting in his way or anything like that. And he told me that I needed to move along or he was going to have to see some ID. And I told him, again, I'm not breaking the law. And he was like, I need to see some ID, you're getting a ticket. And I was like, for what? And he laughed, and he was like, obstructing an officer. And I'm like, obstructing an officer? How am I obstructing you? You came up to me. I'm eating. Like, you know, I have nowhere else to go. I'm not allowed in the park after dark. I can't sleep at a certain time. Like, I'm not allowed to...
11 o'clock at night.
I'm not allowed to be on certain streets at certain times. Otherwise, I'm doing some criminal behavior, of course.
I don't know about that, but there are severe restrictions on sitting, and the rear bank is closed at night.
Yeah.
And again, sleep or covering up with blankets after 11 o'clock is illegal.
So, I mean, where else would you expect me to go to eat? And the officer continued to get in my face, and I told him that I didn't have time for the consensual conversation, and I walked away. He followed me about a half a block, and I got about a half a block away, and he comes up, and he grabs my arm, my left arm, and, like, pulls me back around. One of my friends, actually a bunch of my friends, had seen Officer Azua pursue me. He told me that I needed to stop, show him ID, because I was getting a ticket, and I asked him again, what law did I break? What law did I honestly break? And he looked at me, he laughed, and he just completely ignored what I said. I again told him if there's nothing further, I'm going to continue with my night, and I left. I make it to Front Street right in front of the Trader Joe's by the bus stop, and Officer Azua pulls up in his squad car. He gets out, he grabs me by my right arm, which my dog was on, trying to put me in handcuffs, and said that I was resisting then because I didn't let go of my dog leash, because I'm sure I'd get an off-the-leash charge if I dropped my dog leash. He then told my friend to take my pack and my dog and get back at least 10 feet from us. And at which point, about 4 to 5 other cop cars had pulled up.
In the same direction, different directions.
Different directions.
All on Front Street.
All on Front Street.
Were they blocking the road at all?
They were blocking the road, and they were kind of making a barricade as I would say kind of like an arena to stop people from seeing things.
Police officers or the cars?
The cars. Mm-hmm. And then once I was in handcuffs, he said that he was going to search me. And again, I asked him, what have I done? What am I being arrested for? And again, no response. He pushes me up against the car, and they request a female officer there. And I told him that I'd like to speak to a supervisor. And he ignored me. The female officer gets there, and they're going to start searching my pockets, and they slam me down onto the hood of the car. I wasn't resisting. I was just standing there, and out of nowhere, you know, the cuffs get pulled, and I landed on the cop car.
How hard was the slam?
Hard enough to make the metal dent in and make a popping sound.
Were you injured? Was this face first? Or?
It was more my chest area. I tried to stop my face. I could kind of see what they were trying to do. Like they do, from what I've seen, a lot of people that get roughed up by the cops, that's generally the move that they go for. they started checking my pockets, and they didn't notice that I had a side pouch on. And as explained to me by a San Francisco cop, my side pouch was considered a locked compartment, and locked compartments you need a search warrant to search. I informed the officers of that, and when I tried to move my pouch out of their way, again, I'm in handcuffs, with 4 officers around me, 1 female officer, about 4 male officers. The officer to my left, I don't know his name. I don't have his badge number. I know people that do. I'm a little unprepared right now.
It's okay. Go ahead.
But he looks at me and says that I'm resisting again, and he reaches over my head when my arm is in complete excess to him. He reaches over my head and grabs my dreads and tries to slam me to the ground. I realized that when he was pulling me to the ground that the ram on the front of their car was about to collide with my face, so I tried to brace myself so I didn't end up like losing an eye on the ram. And they said that I was trying to kick the officer. And then I had seen when he opened up his hand, one of my dreads fall to the ground.
So he pulled one of your dreads out?
Yep.
Maybe he needed a souvenir of some kind.
A token of my appreciation. I'm on the ground. The other cops, after he had said that I was trying to kick him, the other cops had then pinned my legs and my arms, which were still handcuffed.
Behind your back?
Behind my back. Mm-hmm. excuse me, and they go through my side pouch. I'm asking him what I'm doing wrong, like, what have I done wrong? They keep asking me my name. They keep interrupting me and trying to ask me my name, figure out, like, where I'm from, and I refuse to tell them anything because at that point I still had no idea what I had done wrong.
You questioned the authority of Officer Azua. That should be obvious to you now. You've learned your lesson, Cynthia.
Yeah, it's dangerous. It really is. Don't question his authority. I got put in the back of his cop car, and when we got to the station, him and the officer who had grabbed my hair and pulled me, were both talking about...
The officer who had pulled your hair out, you mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Those two were talking about how much of a bitch I was being, excuse my language. I heard them talking when they were outside of the car. They were going through my stuff. They didn't really ask me anything. The sergeant came up to me, who I would assume would be their commanding officer.
Do you know his name?
I believe Sergeant Williams. I think that sounds like his name.
Not sure.
I wish I had that paper with me.
Now, this is after you've been taken to jail.
I was still in the police car at the jail.
So you were taken directly to the jail.
Yep, I was taken directly to the jail.
Mm-hmm. About what time was this?
I would say it's about 10 o'clock, somewhere around there, probably a little bit earlier, like 9, 10, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
The sergeant asked me if I had any injuries. The cuffs had gotten so tight on me and yanked around so much that I got a huge blood vessel that ruptured on my right hand. And I've got, like, a huge bruise on my hand and numbness in my hand. My hair had been ripped out. My neck still hurts to this day. It hurt then.
Get to a doctor and get some kind of verification for your subsequent lawsuit.
Yes. I also asked, they asked me if I would like medical attention there, and I said yes, and I was denied. When the sergeant...
At the jail, you were denied
jail.
Medical attention.
I was denied medical attention. He asked me if I wanted medical attention, and
police
then I was denied.
Police officer or deputy did?
The police officer.
Mm-hmm. The sergeant?
Yes, the sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
He then asked me if I would tell him my name, and again, I refused. I was like, I still don't know what I've done wrong. What am I being charged with? And he just shut the door.
Of the squad car.
Of the squad
car. And you were still inside the car.
Yep.
How long were you held there?
I was in the squad car in the garage for about 15 minutes, and then they took me out to take pictures. They took pictures of my hands while they were still in cuffs. So the front part of my hand, which is bruised, never got a picture taken of it. The officer asked me if I'd like to answer anything for him, and I said, no, I'd like to speak to a lawyer. And he told me, too bad, they're not calling one this late at night. When I was in the...
They don't have to call one, but you have a right to speak to one, you know, by calling yourself. And...
Yeah. My rights, I would like to say this, my rights were never read to me.
If they want to interrogate you, they have to read you your rights.
I was arrested, but without my rights being read to me. I wasn't informed of my charges against me. Both police procedures
resisting arrest. You were arrested for resisting arrest.
I was arrested for obstructing an officer.
Yeah.
Which, if anybody doesn't know, is a misdemeanor.
148, I think it is.
148A is the penal code.
That's actually how we came to our first encounter with each other was he walked up during the Huff meeting yesterday and said, "What's 148A?"
Somebody had pointed me in your direction and said he would know. When I was about to go into my holding cell, and they had to search me before I got admitted into the jail. Although they had just run my pocket and had all of my stuff from when they searched me at the scene. So the officer, or the sheriff, not the officer, the sheriff at the jail, I'm still in handcuffs, standing next to a wall, and she asks me what my name is, and, you know, she told me that she was going to search me, and I told her I do not consent to a search, and I figured I'd cover my bases. And she's
jails
like,
usually search you whether you consent or not.
Exactly.
And so do police officers incident to arrest. So.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The sheriff then tried to push me into the wall to lean me up against it, apparently. And I stopped myself from hitting my head against the wall. And I didn't push her. I just held myself up. And she told me that if I had done that again, that I was going to end up on the fucking ground.
The fucking ground. What kind of language is that for an officer of the law?
I don't know. I think they're supposed to be role models, though.
Well, actually, I think we at Free Radio appreciate that kind of fucking candor. Go ahead.
The officer, or the sheriff, continued to, like, prod me for my name. She brought in a nurse to ask me a couple of questions. I guess I got medical attention because somebody in the medical field paid attention to me.
Did she examine your bruises?
No. No, he did not.
He did not.
He just asked me if I was pregnant or if I was going to withdraw from any drugs or anything like that. So...
did you attempt to inform him of your injuries?
Yes, I told him about my neck and my wrist and my back and about my dreadlock.
And his response was?
He looked like he was making marks on paper and then walked out of the room.
So he might have taken a report.
Might have.
But he had no name to attach to the report.
Exactly. And then the officer... the sheriff continued to ask me what my name was, and I finally made a deal with her when she was taking my rings and stuff from me. I hear a lot of my friends going to jail and coming out with, you know, rings or money or clothing or shoes, things like that missing, and I told her that I would cooperate by telling her my name or answering simple questions. That would help her fill out her paperwork if I got all of my stuff back, if I got her personal promise that I would get all of my stuff back. And she looked directly into the camera and promised that.
And you believed her?
I believed her to a certain extent.
Did she keep her promise?
Yeah, I got all of my stuff back, including a half a cigarette, which I was surprised I got back. Normally they throw away stuff.
Did the police take any of your property and sequester it before you reached the jail?
My smoking pipe.
Smoking tobacco or the evil marijuana?
The evil marijuana.
Aha.
Yes.
Did you have your card with you, your California card?
No, because I left my backpack where the officer told me to leave my backpack with my ID in it.
So you do have a California medical marijuana card?
Yes.
Can you prove that now? We have to get tough with her, folks. Sorry, go ahead. We're talking with Cynthia Kennedy, and you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz about an incident that happened on Saturday night where Cynthia was accosted by Officer Azu, apparently took exception to her A, eating a burrito, and or B, not moving along, and or C, not identifying herself. It's a little unclear what particular problem Officer Azu had with you.
Maybe he didn't like my hair.
Could have been your hair.
No, that was the other officer that ripped it out.
Yes.
Sorry, got him mixed up. Mm. I sat in a holding cell for a couple of hours. I'm not sure how long. I went to sleep. But I continued to ask them what my charges were. I asked them, you know, when I was going to get released. They told me that... like, every time I'd ask them what my charges were, they'd ask and, like, they'd say they were going to go check. And they'd never come back.
Oh, they were very busy at the jail.
Oh, yeah. It was a busy, crazy Saturday night. There's probably a lot of people like me in there. Just crazy, you know, criminals getting off
they're
the street.
Using to identify themselves and offending Officer Azu's sense of the need to maintain authority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the sheriff, they fingerprinted me and took my picture, and they told me that they couldn't find me anywhere in the system. I told them of a crime I committed back in 2006, where I had been fingerprinted and booked. I had informed them of all of the information that they needed to find out about, you know, all of that.
Would you confess here to what that crime was?
It was shoplifting.
Aha, so you were a known thief. And what did you steal?
I was stealing clothes.
And fencing them, no doubt, on the high merchandise market.
Not exactly. No, they were for personal use. You know,
did you serve a term in jail for this?
I did not. I had community service and a fine.
Well, apparently you didn't learn your lesson, but Officer Zuo was right to keep an eye on you.
Yes. Dangerous thieving criminals. Mm-hmm. I forgot where I was.
You're saying, was that?
Oh, yeah. And she she said that she couldn't find me anywhere in the system, and without ID, that I wasn't going to be released within 5 hours. And I told her that Officer Azua told me to leave my pack at the scene with my friends. And she said, well, you know, we have no place to hold that here. Well, that's where my ID is. That's my house. I live on the street. Where else do you expect me to put my stuff? The sheriff then told me that I was going to be going into just a general population, and I was going to be on cell restriction.
Because
I have no idea. They just told me I was going to be on cell restriction.
This is in the women's section of the jail?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when I was on restriction, I never left my cell for the 3 days that I was in there. I was in there from Saturday night, probably around 1 o'clock, until Tuesday afternoon, a little bit after, like, lunchtime,
mm-hmm.
Probably maybe, like, 2 or 3 o'clock. They, while I was in jail, I requested to take a shower. They wouldn't let me out to take a shower, or they'd tell me they'd be there in a few minutes and they'd never come. I requested to use the phone to call a lawyer. I requested to use the phone in general.
You were allowed one phone call initially to talk to your father?
I made that call in the holding cell. They have a thing where you, like, it informs people of how they can put money on your thing so you can talk to people, and you get one free minute to talk to any number. But they never tell you that it's a minute. It says a free phone call, but it's a minute long.
It's gotten shorter. I guess maybe Mike Rotkin's shortening the time rules at City Council has been applied to the jail as well, in order to save the taxpayers money in these circumstances.
Of course.
Yes.
I asked to speak to a therapist while I was there, too. I actually had been told that one was going to be coming to see me because I informed the doctor that had given me the nurse that had given me my TB test before I got brought in, that I have severe PTSD, anxiety, depression. Like, I have all of, like, I've been diagnosed with these, and I've been living with them for years. That's part of the reason I have my dog and I'm always around people, is because without people I get really off, and mentally that's not okay for me, and I know where to be. So being in a cell by myself for 3 days, after informing them of my medical or my mental disability, kind of doesn't make sense.
We don't like to call it torture. Let's call it gentle persuasion.
Yeah, gentle persuasion.
Sort of a way to show you just who the Santa Cruz police and the Santa Cruz sheriffs are, and mm-hmm. how we treat people who don't wish to be compliant. It's a lesson. It's sort of a life lesson.
Yeah. Everybody should try it out. No, I'm being completely sarcastic. please don't. Anybody that is listening, please don't. Every time I would ask when my pretrial was, because I was told that I would be released on pretrial or if somebody bailed me out. And I would ask...
What was your bail?
$1,000.
for the charge of obstructing an officer?
Allegedly. They never told me what the charge was. The only form that I have that I signed was for my property when I left, and it was a field report sheet. It was not a...
didn't have a court date.
It didn't have a court date, and it had the obstructing an officer charge on there, but to this day, I still don't know what I'm being charged with, if anything.
Hmm. Have you tried calling the jail to see if there's a... If there's a record of your case or gone to the courthouse to see it?
I was actually going to do that this following week.
Uh-huh. Maybe tomorrow when you go down to check out the trial of sinister song singer Becky Johnson at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, you can peek in at your own records.
Exactly. Yeah. I can. Yes. What did I just say?
You were released.
Before I was released, I was asking them about seeing, or about when my pretrial was, and they, all of the sheriffs there would tell me that they'd go check and they'd be right back and they'd never answer, they'd never come back. I'd push the button for the intercom on my, in my cell, somebody would say they'll check, hours would go by, I'd push the button and ask them again, and they'd say the same thing and never answer again.
Well, there is a personnel shortage at the jail.
Yeah, because it's...
being sarcastic, folks. Although, there may well be, we are doing budget cutbacks, but... you don't tell someone you're going to go check and then not check unless you wish to. I guess you're either incompetent, extremely overworked, or malicious.
I had actually even seen the same sheriff that I had asked to go check 15, 20 minutes later. She didn't say anything to me. Then she had come to my cell an hour later to give me food, and I had asked her about it, and she said that I hadn't been there long enough and shut my cell door on me. I was told Monday before lunch that I would be released sometime after dinner, and after dinner, about 8 o'clock, when everybody was starting to go to sleep, I was like, I haven't been released yet. So I pushed the button for the intercom, and I asked the people, I was like, well, when am I getting released? I was told I was getting released after dinner, and she's like, well, you haven't been here for 72 hours, and you don't have bail, and you haven't been to court, so...
So in other words, is this the same woman who gave this information or a different woman?
A different woman.
Right. So apparently the first one was either an error or not telling you the truth. So in any case, we're talking with Cynthia Kennedy. We're talking with her about 20 minutes. It's a longer story than I usually put on the air, and we're actually going to be hearing it again at some point, I think, because the tape will play. I interviewed you yesterday, and we talked about this at the right outside the Huff meeting, which, by the way, is every Wednesday, 10:30 to 12:30, Sub Rosa Cafe. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, an organization concerned with police abuse like this, and particularly civil rights violations around poor and homeless people, which you apparently seem to be one.
Mm-hmm.
You've been out since. Have you talked to any of your friends, and have you written down your account or what went down? That's always a good suggestion.
Yeah, I've started. I wrote down basically just the gist of what happened, and I'm starting to go back through and write in more detail and talk to other people that have seen, like that were at the scene and watched what happened. Because I'd like to have a well-rounded story instead of just a one-sided story.
But you have been able to find a few of your witnesses.
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, make sure you either record them. I would suggest tape recording them. Maybe you can bring them into... I'll come to the court tomorrow, and I'll have a tape recorder there, and we can record their accounts over a bagel breakfast, which is to say mostly bagels and maybe coffee, tomorrow morning at 9:30, right outside the court at 701 Ocean Street, which is in front of the main courthouse in Santa Cruz. If you want to come down and then check out the trial of Becky Johnson for... And this actually happened 4 years ago. You're listening to I wouldn't call it a flashback. It is an account of Cynthia Kennedy, a woman who describes how she was treated by Officer Azua 4 years ago. A rather dramatic account and a rather methodical account. In the studio with me are
pinch them till they puke Pat Colby and...
pick them off.
Pick them off. Sort of like fleas. You got to pick them off. I guess it's a little different.
I think this place has fleas.
In any case, she's in the studio, and so is Dr. Mike, who's a free radio broadcaster himself, who will show you how to meditate as you, agitate.
Discover the self.
You better get closer to the mic if you want to be heard, rather than simply mumble to yourself.
Okay,
Doctor.
Change the name of my program. It's now Dr. Mike's Mastery Class in Health and Discovery of the Self.
That's pretty lengthy there. In any case, you two have been, making your own comments, which I've shut you down as you tried to make them, because I was trying to take notes on this whole thing. But feel free to give us your reflections now on what you've heard. This was 4 years ago. Either of you, Pat Colby has her finger up first, Mr. O'Grady.
My hand up first.
Yeah.
I beat you to it.
Go ahead, Pat.
I'd like to make the comment that it sounds like the Azula officer, Azua, has not changed at all. His behaviors were all of the same. One of the people that he was trying to harass, one of the black men of the four.
Okay, hold it. You're talking about an incident that happened last week.
On Indie Bay.
Which is on Indie Bay, but which listeners may not be familiar with. In 1 minute, please summarize that incident if you're up for it.
Well, basically, I had driven by and I saw Officer Zula detaining them. I saw nobody smoking any cigarettes. I saw nobody doing anything. I picked up my brother and I said...
These are black guys.
Black guys, yeah. And so I turned around and said, since we're civil rights advocate, we need to video record this to protect these people.
Finish it up.
I mean. Yeah, so we went there and we were video recording Azula. I'm saying it wrong, but so he got quite agitated with us videoing him because he was probably going to pull the same thing that he did on the person that we just heard the tape on, so we kind of shut some of that down. He said that we were harassing him. He was trying to say we were obstructing him. He told my brother to move 100 feet away so that he couldn't
Perhaps
see
he was
him.
Using the move-along law on no. your brother.
Well, we weren't eating a burrito,
Strange
thank God. But and so I immediately called dispatch. And I filed a complaint. I had to call them three times. The third time I called 911 because after he tried to get this one black guy for something, he said, I think you were smoking, so he gave him a citation. And this other guy had filed a complaint about him a couple years before. I did get his phone number. But I saw Officer Azula and Officer Alders. They were circling around, stalking.
Ehlers. Officer Ehlers, I believe it is.
Ehlers.
A-H-L-E-R-L.
They were circling in a one-block thing, trying to find these guys again. That first they had moved over to the Taco Bell, and Officer Azula hassled them there for no reason. Yet there was two smokers that he allowed to just walk by him. One was white and one was Latino. He didn't cite them or harass them or anything, and they were blatant.
And so that's what you saw. I'm cutting you off.
I'm just saying that I had to call because they were stalking them.
We've talked about this before. So
check out the interview.
So, Mike, did you have a thought about this?
Well, I had a recent run-in, you should say, with Officer Azula.
Azua. A-Z-U-A. Azua. You don't want to be impolite to our police force.
Officer aggressive.
Well, he struck me as a person obsessed with his own authority. And besides the fact that he couldn't run after a criminal if he had to because he's way overweight. And secondly he threatened me with, he asked me if I had a license for the bike I was driving. And I said, no, I didn't even know you had a license, needed a license in this city. I've seen no numbers on any bikes, and I've seen thousands of bikes around town, so I don't really know what he was talking about. But he said, well, I can give you that one, which is more expensive than the one I'm going to give you.
Now, you haven't described, Mike, why he stopped you. What happened?
Well, that's a little...
Not complicated. Make it two sentences.
All right. Well, the reason...
Please.
His immediate reason why he said that was cycling up
he
the
stated.
Wrong side of the street.
Okay.
And what actually happened was I don't think it's worth getting into.
You were going the wrong way in a one-way street, is what his claim was.
Yeah, okay. I was actually passing the bus station from one side to the other within the white lines where the path was. Anyway, it was a nonsensical reason. That's the point I'm making. It was totally nonsensical reason.
How did he first approach you? Was he in a squad car? Was he in a squad car? Was he on feet? Foot?
On foot. Standing somewhere on the pavement.
Did you approach him on your bike, or how did this happen?
I approached towards him, but then when I was getting off the bike, he called me over, and he had his book out. When I got to him, he had his book out resting on the wall beside him and his pen out to write my details down. There was no excuse.
Well, he was ready to get the city a little more money in the hope that you might be able to deal with it. Let's see, we got an incoming call. Let's see what she has to say. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with the three of us.
Well, I can only hear two of you because Michael's off mic.
He is. Well, thank you, there, caller. I think you better turn on your mic there, Mike.
We're
working on it. Well, they probably heard it distantly.
Oh, yeah. It was off, yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know. Who's to blame for that? Certainly not the talk show host.
Operator malfunction.
So thank you both for your thoughts. Anything else you want to say about this case or about Officer Azua? For those who want to we're talking about, Officer Azua is prominently pictured on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, which is Santa Cruz Indie Media. And the tale that you're describing, Pat, is there as well. Your story is not, Mike, but we know you'll be posting it in the next 24 hours, perhaps.
Right.
Or perhaps
well,
not.
Well, I'd be, from the stories I hear, he's an undesirable cop in Santa Cruz.
Aggressive.
And what I would like to do is put all this evidence together in one package and bring it to the police chief or whoever. Maybe also the city council. Because we can't have this kind of abusive behavior to that nice girl and other people like we're hearing.
Well, he's a danger.
Well, if anybody actually has an experience that's positive or negative with Officer Azua, you can have a call into this show right now, 427-3772, 427-3772, or you can call off air and leave me a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and that is the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. But in commenting on what you have to say, Mike, and I think it is good to and valuable, more than good, to actually document, preferably with video and audio, but if not, with a written account of the specifics, so that people can be aware of it. Tends to put pressure on the police department. Frankly, that's the only pressure. I mean, there's nothing wrong with letters to the police chief. There's nothing wrong with speeches at city council. There's nothing wrong with, you know, standing up on Pacific Avenue on a soapbox and saying, why do we have officers like Officer Azua? Or why isn't he better trained? Or when the hell are we going to get something done
just
about these
sure
cases
duty.
Of abuse? But really, for me, the key is documentation and simply making statements. Always, he's an abusive officer. He shouldn't be on the police force, which may, you know, it sounds like if these allegations are true, there's a real case to be made for that. But you need to get the specifics and you need to get them out there, not just on this show, which I don't know, 50 to 100 people maybe hear. I'm guessing. I have no idea. But so that it ultimately can be more broadly accessed, particularly if some attorney takes a case involving damages caused by Officer Azua. No, it doesn't have to be a class action. It could be any kind of damage suit that, you know, comes up. So there. Anyway, I wanted to bring this up because the Cynthia Kennedy tape, although it went on for half an hour, actually, and there's another one. I did a subsequent interview. You can find these interviews referenced on Santa Cruz Indie Media if you want to hear them. There were actually two more shows, where one where she appeared live and talked about the case, although largely I think it was a reiteration of what you've just heard. And then there was the original interview I did with her at the Huff, right after the Huff meeting. Pat, you've been waving at me as well as interrupting briefly. What would you like to say?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I think we need to create a Facebook page dedicated to Officer Azua. And also, did she ever get any damages for...
I never heard anything. I never heard if the case even went to court. Or it sounded like it was a little unclear. She said the charge was mentioned on her release from jail property sheet, but there was no court case, no court date given, which is very unusual in a misdemeanor case, and particularly if you've been held for 3 days in jail and there was a $1,000 bail on you. That is, and she wasn't released to go to a pretrial hearing, as they claimed they were going to do. She was apparently just released, although it wasn't entirely clear from the interview whether she was simply released onto the street. She didn't say she was taken to the court, which is what they would do if they were taking her directly to, not a pretrial, as she was saying, but an arraignment, which she needed to get first. So the answer to your question is, Pat, I don't know. You know,
well, can we get the details? I just found his, as a citizen, a Santa Cruz citizen, I found his behavior very alarming.
What behavior? Are you talking about in 2000?
The stalking, the pulling people.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. In 2010?
No,
or
what
you observed last week. Okay, go ahead.
And this is he seems like a pretty dangerous officer, so it really, the police department needs to look into
this. Or a sinister sidewalk street singing.
And, it's kind of hard. You know, people need to carry their video recorders and get more documentation and proof about this officer, because he might end up wrongly killing someone. He was very aggressive.
No, not our police force.
Right in front of the camera.
Nah, it couldn't happen. I actually had a... I put in a Public Records Act request to find out. So, trying to control my studio guests is a real trial, I'll tell you. So, I got a response because I wanted to know what the police department's policy was regarding use of force, drawing a weapon, shooting a weapon, tasering, pepper spraying, chokeholds, which can be lethal and, of course, are the subject of some concern in New York City at the moment. And I got a rather non-responsive response from the police department. I sent back the request saying, well, you answered some of it, but you didn't answer the... I wanted to know who's been tased, who's been had their gun drawn on them, who has had their neck choked, who has been pepper sprayed, and so forth. And the final response to that Jackie Dressler, who's the police department records person, said was, these are confidential, they're protected by section such and such of the so-and-so. And so I sent that, of course, to the diligent John Colby to see if he wishes to pursue it further, but I suspect they may well be right. Police officers have huge privileges and prerogatives that ordinary citizens do not have. Otherwise, why would Officer Azua even dare to do this kind of shit? That's my general thought. I see Pat is holding up a finger. What is it, Pat? Go ahead.
From what my understanding with talking with John is, they could probably redact the victims' names and supply the records of the location, the date, the time, and the officer involved.
Well,
I think that they're illegally shutting down your public records
request.
Well,
perhaps if John wants to follow up on that, he certainly can.
Yeah, I'll suggest it to him.
Perhaps he will. I know he's a busy man making his own Public Records Act request.
He doesn't have access to a computer is the biggest deal.
Actually, I hear he does, but that's another story. Go ahead.
Not really.
Go ahead.
I just want to remind you that the man that was killed or murdered in New York with his stranglehold. The police are denying that now. The chief of police came out today, said he wasn't in that hold. So, you know, they have their own story, mostly lies. Yeah. And that's where the value of cameras and audio equipment comes
in. Well, I believe this was videoed. So I think that, and that actually was a case was mentioned, I believe, on Democracy Now! A couple of things coming up here, and again, I urge you, if you want to look at this situation, you want to hear more of the details or a second or third account of this from Cynthia Kennedy, where probably other aspects of it are covered, you can go to the Huff website, look for back shows for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. There are three shows that are concerned. One is the April 15th, 2010 show. The other is the April 18th show. And I think the third is the 21st or 22nd show, but they're all referenced in the article that was prompted by John Colby's letter about your, Pat, experiences with Officer Azua last week. And so if you want to, you can find the links there if you want to check that out. No. And so we have, we also have, there's a hope that video will soon be posted on this matter. And I know it's, it can happen. It took, almost felt like pulling teeth to get Brent Adams to post videos that covered my arrest at City Council, but he did, and I want to thank him for that. It took him a month to do it, but Brent is a kind of a full plate. And speaking of Brent, there is stuff coming up around the Santa Cruz 11. Brent is one of the final four of the Santa Cruz 11 that are going to court. Before I go on to that, anything last? I think there's nothing further on Officer Azua, but you have your finger up again, Pat.
I didn't get a chance to say this before, but I do have the PowerPoint presentation on the sidewalk letter posted publicly on YouTube. So if you type in Santa Cruz, you know, Santa Cruz plus Santa plus Cruz plus sidewalk plus clutter, you'll be able to view that PowerPoint presentation.
Okay. Okay. So,
that's good.
Anyway, so Santa Cruz 11, those who may or may not know, this is, of course, the group that was dragged through the courts for about a year and a half around the issue of, it was essentially the destruction of the Occupy movement and the punishment of the Occupy movement, some of them for, well, it actually was the punishment of people who were mostly reporters about and simply prominent local activists who were in this vacant bank building, which was taken over for 3 days, and they went in to report, to observe, even to support, but certainly not to plan, and certainly there's no evidence that any of them did any vandalizing, which is the key aspect of the trial that is still being planned for four of them. There will be a hearing on August 13th at 8:15 in the morning for Alexis Briggs. She's the attorney who will be there with her client, Cameron Lorando.
It's your bag, right?
And so, what I'm doing is I want to pass on to you some of the information I got from Alexis Briggs. And she's one of the very most forthcoming attorneys of all the attorneys for the final four of the Santa Cruz 11. What she is going to be doing on the 13th, which is less than a week from today, is she has a motion around the issue of D.A. Bob Lee's involvement with Wells Fargo Bank. Because Wells Fargo did make a contribution to his campaign, apparently, which he failed to mention when he was continuing in the long prosecution of this case. So the hearing on the 13th will concern what documents other parties are going to produce regarding the issue of the relationship, the financial relationship between Wells Fargo and D.A. Bob Lee. Briggs writes me she has subpoenaed documents from both Lee and Wells Fargo, which will be addressed in court at 8:15 on August 13th. Then there will be a hearing on the motion that she and the three other attorneys, for the total of four people who are still being charged with two felonies, felony vandalism, and I guess the conspiracy charges are dropped. Felony vandalism, that's the second felony. They're facing 4 years in prison for these charges. And it shows you how, over what a long period this has been going on, that my failing brain doesn't remember exactly what those charges, the second charge is, but they're all about, they're in the building, and they were... they aided and abetted others who are in the building by their very presence there. That is to say, for example, the minute you walk into a building that is illegal or you're illegally there, everything else done illegal in that building, you can be accused feloniously of aiding and abetting, which is a very peculiar, and it sounds like a DA's tool on this issue. So that's going to be coming up, and I see that Pat will be having something to say about this in a moment. That's going to be happening initially on August 13th at 8:15 in the morning in the courtroom 6, I believe it is, or whatever court judge Paul Burdick is having or is presiding over. And then on the 27th, there will actually be a recusal motion asking that the DA's office be removed from this case and it be turned over to the state attorney general to see if he wants to prosecute this ridiculous horse shit, as I would rather, I don't know, cavalierly, I wouldn't say it's cavalier. I would colloquially call this case. Trial is anticipated to cost about $100,000 for four people for a two-week felony trial. And that, of course, is for the mere presence of these people in a building to teach the Occupy activists a good lesson, it seems to me, that, and also to, I don't know, redeem the honor of the police department, which, to its credit, did not attempt to use force to evict people from what was a 3.5 and is now 5.5 year vacant building at the corner of River and Water Streets at 75 River Street. Pat, you had a thought.
I'm just like, I'm sure this has been brought up, but I'm just really surprised that these were press people. And isn't that like the power of the press to be there to document these things?
No, press cannot be in an illegal status any more than anybody else can.
But city council members?
But the issue, you know, is if it is not illegal to be there, and when I was there, the court found. There was no evidence it was illegal for me to be where I was, documenting it for the radio show. You don't have the right to commit a crime in order to document what's going on. So if you say, I'm just along on this bank robbery to document it for the media, that's not going to work. Or I'm along on this protest, which is protesting illegally to document it for the media, that's not going to work either. In other words, if you are engaged in behavior such as, and they claimed it was trespass, anybody in the building who is not given the permission of the owner or owner's agent to be there is, as I understand it, guilty of trespass. So that's the answer to your question, as I understand it. But
so you weren't in the building?
Oh, yeah. I was in the building. I admitted it the day after I happened.
Then you trespassed. Did you have the owner's permission?
No. The issue was, were we warned that we had to leave? Because that's also a part of the trespass. You have to be told that you're trespassing. The police just can't come and say, get out. They have to say, the owner has advised us you're trespassing. That wasn't said to us until much later, and that they had no evidence to indicate that seven of us, when the charges were dismissed, were in the building after the warnings were given. In fact, I don't think they had evidence that the four who they're still charging were in the building after the warning was given. Of course, the whole thing is ridiculous anyway, because as you pointed out, there were council members who were in the building. There was a city manager. Actually, the city manager was the only person, according to court records, who was given permission to be in the building by the...
Let's arrest those council members.
So I got Catherine Byers, then council member, to acknowledge that she was in the building. But for some reason, Bob Lee just didn't want to arrest her, maybe because she contributed to her... his campaign back in 2010, like Wells Fargo. You have your pinky up again there, Pat. What's up?
No, it's index. But I just want to say, as a Santa Cruz citizen who pays taxes in different ways, I am really appalled at the waste of $100,000. I would rather it go to fix a potholed street, in my opinion, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that would feel the same thing. Why waste money? Because we don't have it.
Not enough, apparently, because DA Bob Lee ran uncontested, and also the Board of Supervisors, I think, gave him his latest appropriation without much dissent or discussion. Although, I got to say, I wasn't there. There was somebody who was covering it. Sylvia was keeping an eye on it. And I'll have to go back and review that, because I'm trying to
I may be writing a little story for Indie Bay about this upcoming 13th of August hearing, where, again, there will only be one of the final four there and he and his attorney. But I'll be there, probably. Mm-hmm. And, Mike, you have something you wanted to...
Yeah. Naturally, he would proceed with the the court trials because the bank gave money to his campaign. He's obliging to the bank. That's the way it works. Scratch me, and I'll scratch you back. You know.
Well, the issue of different organizations can give money, and the issue is whether illegal acts were committed that need to be prosecuted. And if somebody commits an illegal act against one of your donors, you still, are legitimately going after the people that committed the illegal acts. The question is, proportionately, and in terms of the actual crimes that need to be addressed, the court backup, and also the political ramifications of this, is this a form of retaliation against political activists? And also, it's more to me the appearance of impropriety. I don't think
it's a form.
I don't think Bob Lee is actually, I called him the bag man for Wells Fargo, but that's rhetorical excess. What it means is that he seems to be more concerned with protecting the property of Wells Fargo than, for example, the property of the many people who had their property foreclosed on by Wells Fargo, which was one of the main purposes of this bank occupation. And it has been, thoroughly pushed under the rug, even though foreclosure fraud is still an ongoing problem and an ongoing has had an impact on this community that far exceeds that of this three-day occupation. But we don't see felony charges or investigations of any kind around these bank officials or banks. Not necessarily that there could be a lot done at the local level, but I think something could be done. Mike, and then you, Pat.
It's obvious to me he was working for the bank because he kept the information secret that the bank had contributed to his political campaign. So obviously in the mind of Mr. Lee, he tried to hide something that was he shouldn't have hidden, and so that's the connection there. He was working for the bank.
Pat, you got a thought on that?
Well, I just want to say, kind of in addition, it's called a conflict of interest, and he really should have recused dyslexia himself from the prosecution and handed it over to someone else because there is a definite.
Well, I think the issue is really the appearance of a conflict of interest.
Right.
I mean, there probably is no conflict of interest. I mean,
well,
Lee is probably gets a lot of money from a lot of different sources. I think they gave him $10,000, and I don't know that his campaign was dependent. Obviously, he's a pretty popular DA, or at least nobody in this community wanted to run against him at the last one. And in terms of what Mike is saying about hiding, I don't think he hid. He probably regarded it as not terribly relevant because it wasn't hidden. It just wasn't trumpeted or mentioned. It should have been. If he had had his ducks in a row, yeah, he would have said, by the way, I have this, I did get a contribution from Wells Fargo, but it's not going to influence my ability to be, fair and objective. You might say horse shit to that, and I might too, but I really have no idea, to be honest and fair to Bob Lee, how close his connection is with Wells Fargo. We have an incoming call here, Mike. So I'm going to
be politically correct. That's what you're trying to be.
So I'm trying to be fair, Mike. Go ahead.
Robert Norris?
Yes, calling. I'm here.
Hi, Robert. This is John Colby.
John Colby, aren't you the famous Public Records Act guy we've been talking about?
Well, I'm the one who City Attorney Barrastoni says is taking up a lot of the city's time. I'm making a lot of work for the city.
Have you been listening?
So I asked him, are you claiming that I'm harassing the city of Santa Cruz?
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of backed off, but I guess I'm...
Well, John, have you been listening to the show, or are you calling in?
No, I don't have that. I haven't been listening to the show.
You're calling in cold. Well, we did talk about this about an hour ago. We were talking about...
Oh,
Pat,
did you talk to my sister?
Pat is in the studio, and she has given an account of... In fact, she played the message Barrasoni left on, I guess, your machine.
Right, but he won't give us a... a written statement, you know, to that effect. So basically,
right. But you have no evidence other than your testimony that you spoke to him on the phone and he said, you know, bite me
well,
or something.
Well, that's the voicemail that he left.
The voicemail did not mention anything about offering something written or not.
I spoke to him on the phone.
And again, what we're talking about here, since you and I know, but nobody else who just tuned in has any idea of what we're talking about, is, you know, the issue of whether, you know, a disabled person can get some kind of dispensation for going downtown and trying to engage in First Amendment activity that requires a so-called display device. And I don't want to talk about this anymore, really, John, because we've been through it.
Okay, I didn't know that you'd already...
No, I don't blame you. But unless you have some new thoughts or information, do you have any thoughts that you want to add here?
Well, basically, if Barrisoni won't put it in writing, then there's no way for Pat or anyone else to provide evidence that he's made the accommodation.
I understand. My suggestion to Pat was that you prepare a document for Barrisoni to sign because he is, you know, he's such a busy man that he apparently...
No, he refuses to do anything. He basically, his position is that he's not going to... He's not going to put anything in writing.
John, why don't you describe for me the conversation you had with him? Because it would be nice if we had a record to play.
Okay.
But you actually had a conversation with him, what, today or the day before?
Today at about 4:45.
Okay, and tell me, be as, you know, particular as you can about how that went down.
Well, he actually answered his phone, which is unusual because usually I only get his voicemail and he doesn't actually speak to me. He asked me why I was calling and I told him that I had left a voice message asking for a written response to Patricia's accommodation request, and he said that that he left a voicemail, and I said that's not enough. I said that basically the protocol when you're going to meet someone's accommodation request that you put it in writing, that they have, you know, written evidence of not only that you're going to accommodate them, but also basically your position of how you're going to accommodate them. So so that's something that, say, if you put in writing and then the Santa Cruz police did discriminate against Pat further or harass her, that's something which could easily be taken to a lawyer, and they could say, well, we have this thing in writing, and it says that we would do A, B, C, and D and not do this, this, and this. And then the police basically violated.
Right. Wait, John, what was his response?
His response, the first thing he said was, he said, you're taking up a lot of the city's time. And so I asked, oh, are you claiming that I'm harassing the city of Santa Cruz? And he backed off, and then he says, I have a really busy calendar, a really big, busy, you know, workload. And I said, so you can't, like, in, say, in 3 or 4 weeks from now, provide Pat with a written letter. You're too busy to even, in 3 or 4 weeks, provide a written letter, you know, responding to your accommodation request, affirming what you did in your voice message. And then he said, no. And he said he wasn't going to do it. And he said that, and then he suggested that I call the FCPD and contact them for a written letter.
Wait, suggested he call who?
The Santa Cruz Police Department.
I see. Uh-huh.
And I replied to that. The Santa Cruz Police Department isn't even timely enough to respond to my request for the information report. They still haven't provided me that information report that supposedly was finalized several days ago. So, you know, and basically kept going.
Wait a minute. What information report? What are you talking about?
Information report for the incident that happened at the Metro.
Okay, this is something else. We talked about that too, about your being harassed by security guards there for appearing to be videotaping. Well, listen, again, as I said, it seems to me that you have to help out that poor, overworked John Barrisoni and write him up a letter and say, here you go, John, all you got to do is... All you got to do is, you know, write it up and offer it for him, for his John Hancock.
Tony, you don't understand, Robert. John Barrisoni is never going to give me the time of day.
No. I know he's never going to give you the time of day. That's not the issue. But you make it clear to the population by doing this that his excuse is completely specious because all he'd have to do is sign the letter or make some minor corrections. So it has nothing to do with time. It has to do with his refusal to want to put it on paper.
Your accommodation request, what you do is you go to a disability rights organization and you say, can you please write an accommodation request letter for me and address it to City Attorney John Barisoni? And then he gets a letter from a lawyer from a disability rights organization, and then it carries.
That sounds like a great idea, John. I think it's a good one. I think that's something that should be done. And I wish you luck, and I do keep us advised as to, you know, how that goes along.
Right, but I think that Patricia probably will be taking this issue to the City Council, and I think that she should address City Attorney Barisoni in person when he's at the City Council meeting and say, City Attorney Barisoni, why won't you write a letter, or, you know, a one-paragraph or two-paragraph letter? You're so busy doing city business that you can't write me a letter that other people...
It sounds a little like whining, you know. My suggestion is simply that Pat, go up to the mic, describe the situation, and say, in order to help out the city, here's a letter, John, and just hand it to him because he'll be sitting right there, and the media can see it. But that's just my suggestion.
I can't write a letter for him because he's got to write down what his position is. He's going to take a legal position as to how he...
Anyway, I understand there's a lot of legal technicalities involved in this, but I think the whole point is that he is refusing a reasonable request, that's all.
Yes, and basically I told him, if you do not write this letter, you're de facto denying her disability compensation.
And I think we all understand that. The only question is, what's the way to put maximum pressure on him? And we have a comment first by Mike, and then perhaps by Pat, who wants to comment. But again, we've talked about this issue, and I hope to get a report, and I'm not going to spend more than a minute or two on it. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to report in, Robert. Okay.
No, you do. John, don't go away. Mike has got a comment.
No,
for
the only comment I have is to take the message he left with his viewpoints on it and type it up and sign his name to it. And then now you got a letter. He has what he said and signed his name to it.
And post it to Indie Bay.
There are a lot of suggestions.
That's a good idea.
And, hey, all right. Well, we'll expect to see some action from you, although you probably
don't.
Well,
I'm so busy taking up all the city's time.
You and John Barisoni both. You're both too busy. What are the people going to do?
Except he's getting paid.
I mean, I must be keep them working, you know, overtime. You know, I really don't want to cause them too much trouble.
Certainly not. Well, listen, thank you, John. Pat has a final comment.
Oh, we're helping them so
fine.
That they have plenty of work to do so they can... They can get their paychecks and
there
know that
go.
They worked.
Thank you. And thanks for calling in, John. And I appreciate your bearing with me.
Okay. Bye, Robert.
Bye. All right. That, again, we were talking before about the Santa Cruz 11. Their cases come up on the 13th of August. And the 27th of August, there will actually be all four of them will be there, all four of their attorneys and a lot of supporters. There's going to be some public demonstrations around that. I believe they're going to have a march the week before urging that the DA's office drop this stuff. And so, you want to say something, Pat?
Should we have Cafe Huff come and support?
Could be. I don't know.
Use our new Brewmaster coffee urn.
Could you?
Is this about any? So go ahead, Mike.
Could you not go to court with them, whatever the appropriate time is?
That's the whole point. If you want to go to court on either of these occasions, it's a public affair. You can go to court.
No, I'm talking about you. And with the story that some of the council members that were there were not prosecuted, you know, that's...
No. I mean, let me put it this way. They will raise these issues through witnesses if they have to go to trial. They've already raised these issues in previous... You know, in previous commentary to the judge. But, I mean, you can raise these issues to the media, and you can raise these issues to the community, which is more important than these, you know, ossified courts that shouldn't even be doing any of this at all. They should know better. Burdick should know better. But, you know, he's acting as though he doesn't, which is too bad. So there's that coming up. A couple of other things happening. I'm going to actually play some interviews from the street, which I was playing... some of last Sunday. Let's pick up some of that. And before we do, let's hear a little music so I can catch my breath and off-air castigate my two guests, make sure that they don't...
I was going to say tie us up.
And make sure that things go more smoothly. So we seem to be having CD problems, and so I am going to go directly into some street interviews, and we'll see where we go. Again, if you want to call in, the call-in number is 427-3772.
Becky Johnson.
And what you got for us today, Becky?
Oh, I've been listening to all the anti-Israel screeds coming off free radio, the genocide, ethnic cleansing, stealing land.
Disproportionate bombing and murder of Gazan citizens.
Murdering children, yeah.
That doesn't happen, we know, of course.
I just want people to, you know, research before you start throwing these loaded words around. You might find you don't have any ground to stand on, and you might find you're defending Hamas.
Mm.
Look up Hamas.
That's the word from Becky Johnson. Anything on the local homeless scene?
Well, it kind of reminds me of what the anti-Israel screeds are saying about the poor Israelis. We're practicing social and economic cleansing on Pacific Avenue and any places near the boardwalk. There's a demonization, vilification, and delegitimization, where they call them all transients, even the people who are born here, as though these human beings and residents of our community, houseless residents of our community, have our second-class citizens, or not non-citizens, and can be treated differently than other human beings. It's a sickness. It's pervaded the city council. Every single member suffers from it, even the good ones. And
are there good ones?
There's some that are marginally better than others. But in terms of demonization and vilification of homeless people in our city, none of them are really standing up for the moral and ethical position on this.
Thank you, Becky.
No problem.
So it's around 15 after 6. I'm walking up Pacific Avenue, passing Cinema 9.
These are interviews from Saturday, last Saturday, so that would be, if today is the 7th, gosh, what would that be, 2nd, 3rd, something like that.
Between here and the end of the street, there has been no, well, Jeff, a man with many suitcases, often sits just beyond Zoccoli's on a bench is there, but there's no musicians. Wait, there's one guy who's not a musician. He's kept showing some wraps, some jewelry in front of O'Neill's. But
Pat has a thought.
Well, I just want to say I do totally agree with Becky Johnson on the demonizing of the homeless and the moral city council members that aren't standing up, but I just have to say that I differ on her opinion of who's being demonized. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. I'm a Palestinian supporter. I'm not an Israeli Zionist supporter.
And there are those who simply want looking for a fair settlement on both sides.
Totally.
And they would say they oppose some of the things Hamas does and a lot of the things the Israeli regime does and, you know, that kind of thing. But our concern in this show is the homeless. And, you know, while it's often useful to explore these differences between local activists on issues, activists who feel strongly and have probably done some research on these issues and have thus come to their positions, my focus is on civil liberties in Santa Cruz, and I hope that's what we're talking about, because I'm not going to talk about Gaza at any length. We have a show here that talks about that called, it used to be called Mideast Madness. I'm not sure what it's called now. That's several shows, actually, that discuss
Mideast Migrants.
Mideast Migrants, and that's that covers the situation in some depth. You got a thought, Mike? Go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick thought. You're talking about the homeless. There's 100,000 homeless and 10,000 injured out in Palestine right now. So that's homeless in the big H.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to deny that's the case.
But I think that we need to stick to really put our sights on the local civil rights violations.
Well, that's the focus of this show. I'm not saying one shouldn't.
So I totally agree.
One shouldn't actually go out there and indeed engage in protests, as Many people did, including one of our talk show hosts who does Mideast migraines, and he actually, an issue came up at that protest last Friday as to the median, and that I wrote a story about that for Santa Cruz Indie Media. You may be familiar with the fact that the median that is on Ocean Street, no, on Water Street, right between the town clock and the post office, it has become illegal to stand on with a sign, mainly as a way of driving away panhandlers. All the medians throughout the city are now supposedly verboten territory for people with signs. And at that last protest, one individual, an Indy Bay reporter, I think he was acting in his private capacity as a person who was passionately concerned about the Gaza massacres, and I do regard them as massacres, began to raise that issue, or the need for peace in the Middle East. I'm not quite sure exactly what the sign said. I don't want to misquote him. And he was approached by people in the protest who were, you know, also pretty much of the same mind as he on the issue, but didn't like his daring to be on the median because that might alienate the more staid and respectable members of the community, or it might, I don't know, draw the police or something to that effect. And, in fact, one writer wrote in, they thought this man might be a provocateur. And I reassured him that I knew the guy. He's been doing activist work in Santa Cruz longer than many of us, and probably not longer than me because I got a long beard. But in any case, this man was then supported by the two people who expanded the Food Not Bombs meal, Keith McHenry and Abby Samuels, who joined him on the median. And the police did threaten them with tickets, and they were called, apparently, by the protesters who wanted to remove them and make their protest a clean and sanitary protest. So I was really discouraged, not discouraged, I was pissed about this, and perhaps you two are too. Maybe not. What do you think?
Well, when did it become a median? I used to have a sign that called it a park.
No, no. The cement area between the post office and the town clock.
Oh, not at the town clock.
No.
That's still
no.
a park. Okay.
No.
I just wanted to clear that
right.
up.
Right, right. No, that's the story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Because I was going, this
yeah,
was outrageous.
Gotcha. We're good. So the issue then, you know, I think the police came and threatened them with tickets, and you have to move, and it's a traffic hazard. They pointed out, and they didn't know, they told the police this, they told me this, they gave out a lot more, had a lot more conversations with people, because this area on the median is right next to the left turn lane where people stop. And so you can give them leaflets, you can talk to them in cars, you can exchange information. And it, there's never been any demonstrable traffic problem doing this. It's just this law was created to deter panhandlers. And that's what one police officer told this couple, the two protesters who were there, Keith and Abby, and said, you know, this law was really designed to get rid of panhandlers. Of course, in so doing, he kind of blew his cover, because if the law is specifically intended to punish a certain message, that is impermissible. That is constitutionally a no-no. Not that any local court is going to do diddly squat about it, or that any attorney is going to take it to a federal court. But perhaps we can get Pat to seek a disability requirement for the medians, saying that she would like to make some paper cranes on the medians.
John's pretty ingenious in making things be disability-related, so we'll get him on that.
Well, I think we have a morally disabled and spiritually disabled city council and city attorney, but that's been the case for decades, and it's true in many other cities as well, but this is the one we live in. Yes, Pat?
I think I have an idea, because some people are so disabled, and that is such a big street with so many lanes, that they might have to stop at the median for, you know, 15, 20 minutes to rest up to get to the other half.
20 or 30 minutes, that would be kind of hard to push.
But I don't know.
Maybe 20 or 30 seconds.
Well, if you're disabled that badly, you need that time to rest.
Doesn't persuade me, but who knows? Maybe it could be used. There are also concerns I've heard recently about people being harassed in from vehicles or in their vehicles, homeless people who live in their vehicles, out around the Garfield Park area, which is where there is a warming center that happens every 3 days a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And where, Pat, I guess you're going to be doing the what's called the Sunrise Cafe there, which is a sort of a fancy name for coming in and out of the cold for a while and have a cup of coffee and crash out for a little bit, even though it is illegal to sleep between the hours of 11 and 8:30 in any building that is not a domicile. Churches are not domiciles. So your entire operation, Colby, is illegal.
Well, I haven't ever seen anyone sleep. So.
Oh, okay. Well, as long
but
as you
I've,
go around,
I'm
slap them awake.
My Saturday scramble.
All right. Well, keep them awake and, you know, make sure they don't
drop off there.
Or get drowsy.
At least right. not on Saturdays that I see.
Certainly not. Actually, of course, the entire ISSP program, where people do sleep every night, 20 of them, is also illegal insofar as it is inside the city limits of Santa Cruz, and there are no permits for it. I'm not aware that any of these programs are permitted or have been permitted in the last 20 years when the protesters helped create the original ISSP program back in 1988. I was one of those people, so nee. For all you who say that some of us haven't done anything positive and productive. Julie Scholl is a person who lives in her vehicle. She's also a mom, takes care of a couple of kids. And she also is the recipient of what she describes as night watch vigilante action. By vigilantes, and she's written to me that there was an incident at Laurent, and I better put on my glasses to read this a little more accurately. Laurent and Moore Streets. Laurent. And there's a lot of it. The details are not clear about this, but I do get regular reports when I go to the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church downtown. Usually I'm there every Monday. I wasn't there last Monday. And it's also, they have a meal on Thursdays at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, although I think it's a different group that does the meal. Has anyone here been to that Thursday meal? Mike, tell me about the meal. Is it any different than Father Joel's meal on Mondays? Get close to the mic there, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, essentially the food is pretty good, actually, on Thursday. And I think there might be a different musical group playing there, but it's essentially the same, you know.
Do they require you to sit through a lengthy, tedious, mythological sermon in order to eat? Or can you sit outside and relax, maybe rest?
No, there's nothing to require you to sit inside listening. Somebody does. If Father Joel is not there, somebody usually reads something.
Again, I'm not talking about Father Joel. This is not Father Joel's event. This is an event that happens on Thursday at 4 o'clock.
I'm trying to contrast
the two events in case you have any sense of the difference between them.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense of that?
There's not that much difference, basically. But
Father Joel does allow people like myself to make little speeches urging people, let's say, to go to ACLU meetings, city council meetings. Mm-hmm. And there will be a meeting a week from Tuesday of the Board of Supervisors where I'm told sometime activist, former city council running person candidate, Steve Plaich, is going to be presenting as vice chair of the ACLU, or perhaps someone will be presenting, I'm not sure if he's doing it, the ACLU's resolution. And Joel Miller, who is the Calvary Episcopal guy, allows a lot of political interaction in his church around human rights issues, and I think that's commendable. But there are a number of religious groups who may not feel the same way, so I don't know. But maybe because it's in Calvary Episcopal, which Joel Miller is the pastor of, they feel obliged to be a little more lenient, or perhaps they just are lenient as a matter of course. I don't know.
If my memory serves me, there's somebody who reads a short passage from the Bible, and that's about it. You don't have to be inside to attend it. You can be outside, like I say.
Can people make speeches about issues other than the Holy Bible?
No, I haven't heard any speeches speeches you make and stuff. So,
well, that's all right. I mean, I may go down there and see if we can...
Yeah, check it out. Yeah.
I mean, I often go to places where homeless people gather. Usually it's the Red Church and Food Not Bombs meals, but there are other places. There's the St. Francis Soup Kitchen.
Right.
I guess there's Elm Street Mission, although I'm not sure how often they're serving. There's the welfare offices.
Circle Church.
And there's the Circle Church, who I've almost never been to, or very rarely do I get up there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you're going up there tonight, Pat. And you've been trying to kind of find volunteers to engage in more active homeless civil rights activity?
Yeah, that's right. I will be there Saturday at 4 a.m.
Tomorrow night, not tonight. I mean, tomorrow.
It's kind of hard.
Well, actually, it's Saturday morning, I guess you'll be there.
Yeah, I forgot.
Today is Thursday.
I'm supposed to be in bed by now.
Well, you better keep your nappy going there so you don't screw it up there, Pat.
What coffee's for?
Okay, today is Thursday. You bet.
So.
Oh, it is Thursday. Yeah. You scared me.
Yeah, no, I told you it's Saturday. It's not. First I said tomorrow.
I guess I didn't have enough coffee today.
Yeah, maybe so. So what else have we got here? I'm reviewing my notes to see if there's anything. I'm going to try to post some of the motions that attorney Alexis Briggs is going to make around the Santa Cruz Lab, which has to do with the financial relationship between D.A. Bob Lee and Wells Fargo. Bob Lee, it should be said, tried to recuse Judge Paul Burdick, who is, I'm no fan of Paul Burdick, but he couldn't really stomach the repeated contempt of court, is what it was, of the DA's office in refusing to provide the discovery of the documents in my case and six others former DA Rebecca Young, who has since disappeared from the DA's office and into the wilds of Texas. I wrote her an email, but she hasn't responded. So it'll be interesting to read those documents. Maybe I can post them. Let's hear some more from the streets, not just from the suites.
Usually there's a whole bunch of people. Let's ask them what's up. So we're here in front of O'Neill's talking with us.
John Ireton.
And John, you are actually making some of the very wraps that are sitting in the display device in front of you.
Yes, I am.
And how are sales?
Sales are okay today, but I've done better.
Been doing this regularly?
For the past about 2 months.
And have you been out here on Pacific Avenue how many hours a day?
Mainly only on the weekends for probably about 2 hours to 3 hours.
Did you just come out about an hour ago, or how long have you been out here today?
About 40 minutes.
And was the place deserted when you arrived? I see the only person here.
Yes, there wasn't anybody except for about 40 feet that way, and then they left, I think.
I see one guy with a violin way up the way next to Verizon. How are you being treated by authorities?
On Pacific, you get treated fine. I'd personally rather work on the boardwalk, but I always get in trouble there. I actually got a ticket last weekend, but it was one of the best days I've ever had. So,
what was the reason for the ticket?
Well, they told me to leave, so I did, and then I came back anyway later on that day, about 2 hours later, and the same cop saw me again, so he was actually really nice, but he gave me a choice between vending ticket and a sitting within a 14 inches of a fence ticket. So I took the 14 inches of a fence ticket, but...
So you were, should we say, intimidating the fence?
Yeah, I guess so. But either way, people seem to love me down there. I mean, the kids and parents at the beach, it's a perfect place to sell bracelets because they kind of are beach bracelets, but...
Now, the first time the police officer contacted you, did he advise you what specific law you were violating?
They never really do. They usually always just say move along or to leave. And a lot of times they don't even stick around. They'll just tell you to leave and keep walking.
And how many times has that happened to you, would you estimate?
On the boardwalk, it's happened probably every time I've been there so far, and that's probably like 6 or 7 times. And here on Pacific, it's only happened probably once, I'd say. They told me to leave, and I'm not sure why, but they just did.
And this choice he finally gave you when it came to the ticket crisis, what was the other option?
The other option was to get a ticket for vending, which I figured I'd avoid that, seeing as I want to continue to vend, even if it's not down there. So I figured I'd just avoid that ticket.
Did the cops sweeten the blow by getting a rap from you?
No, I wish.
And we've been talking with
John Ireton.
Thanks, John. I don't know. I may have had you on the show before. Have I interviewed you before?
I don't think so, man.
Well, you should be on the show tomorrow. And as I approach Verizon Wireless, or actually passing Sway, we have a man in a coat and tie playing for tuition fees. Let's listen to his music. Which is now devoid of things in the window except for a no trespassing sign. We have a man strumming away.
front of the Palomar. We have the traditional music of that man about guitar. Of it, but said there was one incident earlier today.
I think it was yesterday, last week. It was a while back. Phoenix Rose, who actually created art out of the man who ticketed him, which I think is fascinating. Which I have here because I liked it so much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What kind of art are we talking about?
Well, it's an image of the.